argument is Balthazar versus City of Chicago. Jakowiak?
Jakowiak, thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I'm Larry Jakowiak. I represent the plaintiff, Sharon Balthazar, in this appeal. This is a case about a woman who had the door to her home smashed in Chicago police officers without...
Did they then enter and handcuff her and so on? Or did they just glance in?
There's two different versions of facts. Ms. Balthazar...
I'm asking you a question. Which was it?
For purposes of this appeal, I believe the court...
Just tell me your answer.
The officer said that they didn't go in.
I've asked you a question, and you're refusing to answer it. So we'll pass on to another question.
Okay.
I think this is the strangest case I've ever seen, because your proposition is that a plaintiff can commit perjury and then win on an alternative non-perjurious ground. I've never seen that before.
That's not my proposition at all.
I think it has to be, because almost all, I think everything in your brief is about the alternative theory. The alternative theory is, yes, he broke the door and probably looked inside, the other officer called him, you're in the wrong place, and he leaves. There's all this stuff about prejudicial remarks by the judge. That all goes to that second theory. That's the emphasis of the appeal. But that second theory is predicated on the fact that she committed perjury when she said that they came in and handcuffed her.
Your Honor, there are no alternative theories. At this stage, in the district court below, we move for judgment pursuant to 50A and 50B. The standard at that stage is the evidence most favorable to the non-moving party. The evidence most favorable to the non-moving party would be that the officers didn't go in. I don't have an alternative factual theory. The legal standard is the evidence most favorable.
Didn't she testify?
Sure, she testified that the officers did go in. The officers...
Yes, but your appeal is premised on the assumption that they didn't, in which event she was lying. There is no possibility of error here.
It's not premised on that at all. My appeal looks at the facts in the light most favorable to the...
She argues that they came in and handcuffed her.
That's just presented by way of background information.
That's false. It's perjury, right? There's no way it could be a mistake. It's perjury.
There's factual disputes in every trial. These officers have different version of the facts.
Wait a second. The alternative theory that they looked in, and that was a search and so on, that's premised on the falsity of her original theory about being handcuffed.
It's not premised on that. This is a trial like every other trial.
The theory is much more attractive to her. It would produce much larger damages.
Well, this happens in most cases of this nature at the summary judgment stage.
If the second theory is true, what kind of damages could she hope to get?
The second theory...
They compensated her for the damage to the door, so it's just... being startled. I'm sure it's startling to have your door broken in.
Well,
so what's that worth? $100? $250? What?
I don't know what it's worth, but there's other issues in this case where the plaintiff should be allowed to present a full case regarding her damages.
What other issues bearing on damages?
Well, whether there was damages is a question of credibility, and for example, the highly prejudicial, improper
what
remarks.
Damages were there? What damages could she have proved?
Well, at a trial where there's a resolution of a factual dispute, there's the damages of the shock of the officers.
What damages other than the broken door could she prove? What would she present as damages to the jury?
The shock and startlement of the officers smashing in her door, how startling that was, how that affected her afterwards.
That's the question, Judge Fosher.
Yeah.
In a full trial where these issues were fairly litigated without the remarks that counsel made in closing arguments and with proper jury instructions and properly sustained objections, a jury can look at this anew and reach a different alternative. We're asking for a new trial on liability against some of the officers.
At a trial, would you be pushing both theories, the theory that they came in and handcuffed and, you know, did other things, and that they just looked in? Or would you just be litigating one of those?
At every trial I've ever done, there's conflicting version of the facts.
Answer my question. It's a very simple question.
However the evidence came in, and the evidence will become conflicting in this case.
Answer my question. If the case goes to trial, will you be litigating both theories of what happened?
I would litigate the exact same way.
Can't you answer a question, yes or no?
Both theories of facts.
Can you answer a question, yes or no?
Yes, I can, and the answer is yes. I would present...
Yes. Okay, yes. So what you tell a jury, if you don't believe the first theory, that she was handcuffed and so on, if, in other words, you believe she's lying about that, well, move on to the second theory and give her something.
I didn't say that, and I wouldn't say that.
You'd have to say it. Because if that first theory fails, it's because the jury thinks she lied. There's no alternative, is there?
Not necessarily.
What's the alternative?
Perjury and conflicting facts
is... Would you answer my question? What is the alternative for the jury to think? She says she was handcuffed. They don't believe her. Now, what's the alternative to their concluding that she lied?
Well, in a case like this involving police officers, there's a lot of different factors, and there's a huge amount of bias towards police officers who, in a case like this, had a warrant and were doing their job, and perhaps there's some sort of compromise during jury deliberations, which happens in most cases, and they don't award her fully, but... The alternative theory is a theory about one police officer who allegedly carried an 80-pound ram up three flights of stairs and then smashed in a door unprotected, even though he's emphasizing throughout the entire trial how dangerous this job is. Is that perjury? I think there's a good argument it is perjury. So the jury would be responsible for...
There was a crowd there? And they handcuffed her? Is that your theory?
These officers said that that's how they're trained. That's how they execute search warrants. They wouldn't go into a smashed on a door in a situation like this without guns out and pointed because it is so dangerous. They do that all the time.
Mm-hmm. Anything further? You want to save your time?
I'll save it for rebuttal. Thank you, Hunter.
Okay, thank you. Oh, yeah. Ms. Masters?
May it please the court. This was a matter that was fully tried to the jury. There were two very conflicting versions of events, and at the end at closing argument, plaintiff's counsel invited...
Were you the lawyer for the city and the district in the district court?
I was not.
You're an appellate specialist, I take it.
I'm sorry, could you...
I say you're an appellate specialist, I take it?
Yes, that's correct. At least I like to think that of myself.
Mingle. That's what we are, too.
I don't understand why your predecessor in the district court would say that even Balthazar's lawyer did not believe Balthazar. How could, what's the basis for that?
Your Honor, we have certainly admitted in our appellate brief that that was a mistake. The basis of that is presenting this alternate theory, which, as your question sort of indicated, imply that she, that Ms. Baltazar lied to the jury and invites, you know, when there were two very, very different versions of events. There wasn't some type of middle ground here.
But what Mr. Jakowiak said was that it's not that he disbelieves Baltazar. It's that he was afraid that the jury would disbelieve Baltazar, and therefore he wanted an alternative theory. So the fact that he presents the alternative theories, one of which really does assume a conclusion by the jury that she was lying, but the fact that he presents it doesn't mean he doesn't believe the first theory. He's just worried that the jury may not believe it. So I don't see any basis whatsoever for the city's lawyer to say that his Balthazar lawyer didn't believe Balthazar, which I would think would be very damaging to the jury.
Your Honor, we would disagree that it is very damaging in this context where the plaintiff has already presented an argument that's the equivalent of believe my client, I win, don't believe my client, I win. So when we get up and say, well, he doesn't believe his client, at that point, but what's the prejudice?
Yeah, you could say to that the jury, you can return a verdict, would be a different verdict, if you, whether you believe or don't believe her, without saying, I don't believe her. That's a lot stronger.
Your Honor is correct. I mean, we've admitted that that statement should not have been made.
What did the judge make to pull the sting of that?
The judge did not sustain the objection, but the point we would make here today...
Why not? I don't understand. What basis could he have for not sustaining the objection or telling the jury it was false? There's no evidence that Balthazar's lawyer does not... Isn't that what he should have told the jury?
Well, Your Honor, it certainly would have been better for, I think, all of us had he sustained the objection.
Well, I think...
That would be the Christmas case. But what we would say is that the plaintiff has not argued in his opening brief or basically even in his reply brief what the prejudice is when you have presented the jury
with prejudice. If you say the defendant's lawyer doesn't believe the defendant, that's the end of the case as far as the jury is concerned.
Your Honor,
who would know better than his lawyer if he didn't realize?
In this particular case, we do not believe that counsel has made an argument specific as to prejudice. He's just saying, well, I lost the case. But he also, frankly, Ms. Baltazar, very arguably, lost the case because she had presented a whole argument about this very dramatic version of events where the police ransack the apartment, they handcuff her, they point guns to her, and then her counsel stands up in closing argument and says, well, maybe that happened, but even if it didn't happen,
okay,
just if these officers...
You're arguing harmless error. That's fine. It's just I do think that the judge should have done something to negate the impression that such a statement would have on a jury.
Well, and we do think...
Also, why didn't... When the jury asked for clarification, why didn't the judge say something besides the laws and the instructions? Well, what's that about? I don't get that.
Your Honor, I think it was because he was trying to direct the jury to follow the instructions and that the term seeing...
Why didn't he do this? Why didn't he say, look, as I said in the instructions, a search... To be a search, it doesn't have to involve a physical entry. That was a very lucid portion of the instructions. All he had to do was remind the jury that that was in the instructions, rather than just say the law is in the instructions.
Well, the question, one of the questions that the jury has asked, is this a statement of fact or is this a one of law? So the court responds, it's one of law. So
what I don't see how that responds to the question. We need clarification.
Your Honor, I'm sure that's what the district court thought was best at the moment.
Perhaps
he
thought they had misread or overlooked the instruction he had already given.
I mean, perhaps that's the case.
How long were the instructions?
How long were the instructions, Your Honor? I would have to go back and look. They were not excessively long. I mean, I think there was one.
Excessively, that tells you nothing except maybe that lawyers are used to reading great gobs of words.
What did
Baby Bear think they were?
Yes, was it too long, too short, or just right? We would submit to the court it was just right, that there was not any issues here about too many or too few instructions. And I would highlight to the court that the actual issue instruction given was the one given, submitted by the plaintiff, to the extent there was, I mean, we certainly objected to that.
You don't need a physical entry?
Right, you don't need
That was a perfectly nice instruction. I just think it would have been easier on the jury if the judge had, rather than just say the law is in the instructions, had just reminded them of this instruction which answered their question.
I assume the judge consulted with both counsel before he addressed the question.
I believe that to be the case, Your Honor. I would have to go back and double-check that.
But if it didn't, we'd be up here on a different issue altogether.
Right. I mean, certainly plaintiff has raised this issue and has not argued otherwise. It's my recollection that he did consult. We think that there were issues of fact for the jury to decide. The jury heard all the evidence. The jury ruled in the officer's favor, found judgment in the officer's favor. Most of the arguments that the plaintiff is now making are arguments that he's entitled to judgment on the verdict because the jury should have construed the facts differently. There's no cases cited to the court that it should reverse a judgment based on the idea that eight people did not make it factual judgments correctly. As for the comments by counsel, as Your Honor framed it more articulately than I did, we believe it was harmless error. Everything that was said by our counsel, the remark we were discussing about not believing counsel, and also the complaints, there were two other complaints that our lawyer misspoke the instructions. And when we look in context, every comment that they are complaining with begins with the sentence, was it an unreasonable search? And then on occasion refers to search without the modification. But that was not an abuse of discretion to fail to sustain those objections either. If the court has no further questions, we'd ask for the reasons set forth here today and in our brief that the judgment be affirmed. Thank
okay.
you.
Thank you, Ms. Masters. Mr. Jacobian?
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple of brief points.
You were trial counsel, I take it?
Yes, Your Honor.
When the question came from the jury, did His Honor call the two lawyers in to discuss the question?
Yes, there was a discussion. I believe it was by phone. I don't recall if we went in or if it was by phone. There was a discussion, and I believe it was by phone, and we raised the issue that this amplifies our previous objections about...
Having said that, did you ask him to... Did you tender him another instruction or suggest one?
This was something done on the phone, and we had asked him to...
No, I don't care whether it was on the phone or on the floor. I want to know, did somebody say to the judge, you should not give that instruction, you should give this instruction, or you shouldn't say what you're saying, you should give an additional instruction? Did you say that?
I referenced back to the objections and closing arguments and asked that the judge...
At the time of the conversation, on the phone or otherwise, having to do with the question of the jury, did you tender any position of the judge that would indicate he should give an instruction or he should shut up or do what he did or anything? Was there an instruction tendered or suggested by the defense?
I don't recall giving a specific...
By the plaintiff, I mean.
I don't recall giving anything specific.
Pardon?
I don't recall giving anything specific.
And the answer is no, because the record would show it.
Then the answer is no.
Yes, okay.
Is it transcribed, this phone conversation?
I believe it should have been.
By the record.
A couple other brief points, Your Honor. As far as the alternative theories, at this point, it's the 50A, 50B motions at issue, which is essentially the same standard as at summary judgment. At summary judgment, the non-moving party says, look, if you believe what the other party says, and there's always two different versions of facts, otherwise there wouldn't be need for a case or a trial. At summary judgment, the party says, if you believe what the other party says, we get judgment. That's essentially the argument we're making here, the same standard as at summary judgment, 50A and 50B. If you believe what the defendants say, we get judgment at least against Officer Beckman on the search issue. Counsel made reference to the fact that this comment about not believing the client was invited, it wasn't invited. They reference this issue on page 33 of their brief, and they say that my comment that we don't have to prove the officers went in to prove there was a search invited their comment. That comment simply said that, simply argued, look, we don't have to prove they went in to prove there was a search. They said they smashed down the door. There wasn't authority for that. They saw inside the apartment. They violated their privacy. That's a search. That comment did not invite the other comment. And then on the issue of even going into this apartment, the only explanation or justification they try to offer is that Officer Beckman was confused because he understood the apartment to be to the right when facing the building, and the warrant said rear apartment. But let's assume the warrant said apartment to the right when facing the building. He went to the apartment to the left when facing the building. Either way, he went to the wrong apartment in direct contradiction of what the warrant allowed him to do.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Jacobi.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And we thank Ms. Masters as well.